Hello and welcome to Ideagen's 17 Days of Sustainability. Today, I would like to welcome Educational Development and University Partnerships Director at Summer Discovery, Esteban Olivares. He will be leading up today's panel, and he's an excellent moderator. We're so glad to have you, Esteban.
Thank you, Cooper. Glad to be here. So today, we're going to be talking about SDG number 4, ensure inclusive and equitable quality education and promote lifelong learning opportunities for all. Equity in education is so important. And we have some amazing folks here in our panel who are going to be talking about some of the initiatives that their organizations are running, are launching, are have been doing for a while. So we're excited to hear from them. One of the most important things to realize about equity in education and the SDG goals is that they're global, they're worldwide. And so we're going to have some folks who are going to talk about some global initiatives, but we're also going to be talking about some initiatives and equity in the United States. And I think that's a very important piece to bring to the conversation. What we know right now is that a lot of students are out of school, or they just do not have access to online education. They don't have access to internet. We saw on the news last week two students in California who were outside of a Taco Bell just trying to get internet, and they were 90 miles away from Silicon Valley. So how do we solve these issues, and how do we create that equity that is so needed? And this issue is so important to me because I come from Stockton, California. There's recently just a show on HBO, a documentary about Stockton, and there's a lot of inequality there. And essentially, if I did not go to college, if I didn't enter higher ed, I would have ended up dead, a drug addict, or in prison, or working out of prison. Those were some of the options that were available to me. And so higher education was pivotal to getting to where I'm at in my life and my career now. And that's why I'm so passionate about this issue. And I think you're going to see our panelists bring a wide variety of scope and interest. We have with us today from Barnard College Pre-College Programs, Alicia Velasquez. She's the Director of Pre-College Programs. We also have from Summer Sisters at American University, Maveen Azam. She's a Program Manager there. And we also have Casey Neer from CollegeWise. She's Executive Director of College Counseling. Just want to welcome everybody. And so we're going to go around and let's start out. I've done some basic introductions, but Alicia, if you want to give us a broader introduction and maybe some initiatives and some programs that are near and dear to your heart and Barnard College, that'd be great. And then we can go with Maveen and then Casey. How about that?
Yeah. Thank you, Esteban, for that wonderful introduction. As you mentioned, I'm the director of pre-college at Barnard College, which is the sister college, the women's college at Columbia University. I myself have been a part of the Columbia community for the last 8 years. I can't believe it's actually been that long. I'm a Brooklyn native, very proud of that. And I attended college in New York State through the Higher Education Opportunity Program, which is definitely meant to give students an opportunity to attend college without all of the financial constraints of attending college. And so just living through that mission has really propelled me into my career in higher ed, and always, you know, looking to be a beacon of reason and understanding for issues around equity and inclusion, especially in the pre-college programs that I run. So I'm looking forward to a wonderful and robust conversation today, and thanks for inviting me.
Yes, thank you so much, Esteban and Ideagen, for giving me this opportunity to present a program which is very close to my heart, and especially the mission of the program. I manage a program, an exchange program at the American University School of International Service. And the program is a very unique, uniquely modeled, the structure. It's public-private partnership. The public part of the program is covered by State Department. The funds come from U.S. Embassy in Pakistan. But the private part is also very interesting because we have partner universities which donate us scholarships for the program. So under this program, which is called Summer Sisters Exchange Program, we bring high school students from Pakistan, about 20 to 24 every year, and they come and attend summer programs and in some of the top universities in the United States. And at one point, Barnett was also one of our partners, and we have other partners like Harvard, University of Chicago, Duke, Brown, including AU and some DC universities, such as Georgetown, GW. And we try to bring girls who represent underserved communities in Pakistan, not only in terms of socioeconomic backgrounds, but also ethnicities. And so, for example, Balochistan, which is the largest province in Pakistan, is highly underserved. So only we get only one student from that. So you can see the need. And what the program does for the girls is give them confidence and exposure, which is the best gift that you can give to a woman in her teens, and sky is the limit. So unfortunately, the program will be ending this year due to just the way we do not have the luxury of being funded from Congress like Fulbright or YES programs. So, but we are transitioning to another program, which will be sister-to-sister exchange program, under which undergraduate students from underprivileged backgrounds will be coming for the next 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. And Casey.
Hi, I am Casey Neer, and like Esteban said, I am the Executive Director of Counseling at CollegeWise, and my path to the college counseling world came through my own path. It sounds like Esteban, I'm from the greater Bay Area in California, and San Jose is where I grew up, and I ended up eventually landing at Scripps College after transferring there and loving the experience. Women's College in Southern California, which I always have to represent on my wall, and loved my experience and really fell in love with the women's college experience, but mostly just the fit of a place that really was what I needed at the time. And eventually fell into the world of admission, where I worked at Mills College, another women's college, this time in Northern California. And really through my own education and working at Mills, grew really passionate about educating women and girls and those who identify as female at women's colleges. And I now work at CollegeWise, which is a college counseling company. And we also partner with Reach Higher, which is Michelle Obama's college initiative. And just this week, we've launched one of my favorite things that we do, which is a guide to the Common App. And we actually have a platform this year for all of those students and counselors transitioning to online counseling this week to kind of share resources to help them adjust to all of this. And I'm excited to kind of dig into the issues right now that students are facing, particularly girls, but kind of everybody right now with this transition that everyone is dealing with.
Thank you, everyone. I think it's so important that we talk about the partnerships, because it sounds like everyone is involved in some partnerships on some level, and kind of the work that we do is not possible without these partnerships. And we're all kind of in the pre-college space as well. And in that pre-college space, I remember back in high school, I think it was my freshman year, I heard about a program called Upward Bound, which is a TRIO program, federally funded. And they would pay us a very small amount to attend a pre-college program and live on a college campus. And I did that for 3 years. There was a lot of local businesses that also participated and helped out and gave their time. And it was federally funded. And of course, it was the University Pacific, where I graduated from, that hosted the program. So without all those partnerships, nothing was possible. And there were students from all over Stockton, students who were children of immigrants, students who were immigrants themselves, students who came from very trying circumstances. But this was the one place where we could escape to each summer and learn about college, learn about how to apply for college, the FAFSA, take a college class from a college professor and see ourselves on the campus. Without this program, I don't think we would have been able to do that, to actually see yourself living there and being part of a higher ed community. So anybody can jump in, but tell me, why do you think it's important that these partnerships and collaborations are so important, especially in the pre-college space?
I can jump in here and talk about our partnership model. I think one of the biggest things when selecting a college for a young woman and men as well, right, is finding the best fit. And I think our community partners, because they have such rich relationships with their students, they really do a great job of finding colleges that really fit their students. And so persistence is a big part of the game and when we're looking at students to admit. And so these partnerships really help us find the best students. In our pre-college programs, we work with a lot of organizations across the country to find girls that would be interested in attending a women's college, that have the right kind of support for the challenges that come with stepping onto a college campus, a lot of times for the first time. And so as a director, understanding that they have this support outside of our office is also super important, because I understand that they're going to leave at some point, and I want to make sure that the message and the modeling continues. And so our partners, you know, we're very fortunate to be able to work with them, to be able to work with their students, but they're definitely a big part of our programming model and our communities, and really help us get to the core of some of the issues of equity and inclusion in the work that we do.
Esteban, I would just like to add, building up on what Alicia said, we wouldn't be here, or I wouldn't be here managing this program if there had not been a partnership. And partnerships not only help us, find resources, combine resources, but also combine mission. So we are helping State Department and also contributing to the global mission of United States government to, spread peace and spread quality education and just foster exchange on a cultural and educational level, and contributing to both sides. For us also, something very fascinating that happened, for example, some of our partner universities doubled the scholarships, Duke and Brown, 1 to 2, 2 to 4, that's money for them. And the reason that they cited why they wanted to expand the program was the contribution that the students were making and what they were delivering and conveying and to the student body in these universities, the value that they were bringing. So there is so much possible with these partnerships. And in this world, nowadays, it's you can't accomplish everything alone. You have to have partners and to broaden the mission.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to add is I think a lot of on the college side, they're starting to kind of being forced in some ways to partner because, you know, I think about when I worked in admission and fall was travel season. And I don't know about, you know, the both of you in terms of getting in front of students, but everybody is trying to pivot to a bajillion Zoom somethings these days. And I think I'm seeing, you know, just the Seven Sisters I know, put together an online panel. And I think a lot of people are kind of forcing to say, why don't we join forces and get in front of students? And if it's really about finding the right fit, we should do this together. And I think the one piece that's lacking that I know a lot of people in admission are discussing, and we certainly talk about a lot, is, and Esteban, you brought this up, those who don't have access to reliable internet, and a lot of our rural students in the US and abroad, yes, banding together and doing things online is wonderful, and I think increases access and collaboration, but who is left out and how can we make sure they're part of the conversation? And I don't know that everybody has an answer to that, but I think that's one piece that has come up a lot as we transition to more online spaces.
That's a great point, Casey. And so definitely being part of the conversation and bringing students to a pre-college program or undergraduate students, you know, who may not be able to afford it, whether they're domestic or international, I think is so important to just the learning experience, whether it's happening at the elementary school level or the college level. I remember I ran pre-college programs at George Washington University and Georgetown University prior to this, and we partnered with Summer Sisters, and I know the students coming and being part of the classroom and the discourse just made the experience richer for everyone overall. You know, if we have students who can only afford and pay for the program in the classroom, we kind of have an echo chamber. And when we bring in diversity, it brings a new experience, a different point of view to the conversation. And I know that that's so important, but we have to be innovative how we do it. And, you know, Summer Discovery, we, you know, also partner with Reach Higher and a lot of community-based organizations to bring in students on scholarship. But we have to be innovative in the way that we do it. And Casey, can you speak a little bit about innovation and what are some things maybe CollegeWise is doing around innovation to kind of tackle this issue?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody, I think the word of 2020 was pivot. Maybe second to that is innovate. I think no system that had been in existence before March could really persist. And so I think everybody has had to kind of go, okay, what was working, what wasn't, what can we shift? And I think one of the bigger things, obviously, for students and counselors was shifting to you know, how do I do this online? How do I do this at a distance from other people? Do I have reliable internet? So that was one thing that we kind of saw with teachers and educators really needing to spend the entire summer preparing as best they could to be online this fall. And so one thing that we have is, you know, we are in the same space, certainly in terms of knowledge as counselors, but we tend to have a bit more time since we don't have all of the hats that we're wearing. So we wanted to put together this collection of resources to share with school counselors in preparation for the fall. And so we put together a course for any senior, you know, totally free to apply to college. That goes live this week, just a series of videos to help every senior, because we recognized that everything has changed and it can feel disorienting. And if it's disorienting, that can lead to two outcomes. It's either stressful and you do it and it's stressful, or you don't and you don't end up applying to college. And we wanted to do, you know, a small part at least making it clearer this year how to get to the finish line.
Thank you. Yeah, we have to, in this great pivot, I think we learned all a lot. I think there's also a lot of things that we thought were not possible, we realized are. Alicia and I are part of a summer organization called National Association of Summer Administrators. So it's folks who run pre-college programs, undergraduate summer programs, universities around the nation and a few global sites as well. Everybody had to go into this pivot. I think a lot of discussions in higher ed around this is not possible, this is not the way we do things, we can't do it this way. We learned through, you know, the pandemic and the pivot to, you know, provide courses online through the summer for undergraduates and pre-college students that some things were possible. Alicia, do you have any words of wisdom or anything that you've learned from kind of this great pivot? It was a heavy lift for everyone in the pre-college space. I appreciate all my son's teachers way more than I ever did before. But do you have anything you'd like to share with us?
I said, I think what this whole time period taught me was intentionality. I think when we have the blessing of physical space, we can kind of lend, we leave a lot of stuff to happenstance for connections and community to be built just by being physically with each other. And so being online forced you to draw pinpoints and coordinates in ways that we usually don't. It was almost like being an executive producer and coordinating all of these various things to happen. But I think it was beautiful because it caused us to look at our curriculum in a different way, think about our time together, think about what life outside of the classroom really needs to be. And I think it was more respectful of our students' time, of family. We gave that consideration in a way that we wouldn't. And we also had to remember that they were at home and what that meant for parent participation, which is a beautiful thing about working with high school students, because you recognize how heavy a lot of their parents' voices are in this process. And so it was nice to be in the home to be a part of that and be able to have those conversations with parents. But everything was intentional. Everything had a reason. If it didn't have a reason, we took it out. It just didn't make sense. And I'm really looking forward to carrying that through when we come back on campus, because I think it's gonna make for a much richer experience, and we can exactly say, this is why we do this for this, for that. And I think we do in our mission, but I think it drove us to this very like specific point that we've strayed away from, because we just have the beauty of physical space and time when we are together in these bubbles on campus in the summer. So I'm excited to continue to be like super strategic, you know, super intentional with the work that we do, because I think we yielded great results this summer.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think through this, through the pivot and through going to online with all of our programs at all the universities, especially for the pre-college students, a lot of factors had to be taken in consideration. So, Maureen, I'm interested to hear, when this happened, how did this play out with your partners and some students that you had identified for, you know, scholarships to come to the U.S. over the summer?
So the kind of program that I deal with, it was a little complicated because it involved international travel. So our partners were amazing. They all, while, you know, struggling to figure out how to transition into a summer that nobody knew how to, you know, what to do with in terms of COVID and resources, they were very supportive, and we kept them in the loop at every step of the way. Of course, our visa process and everything else starts in March, and that was the time when COVID started. So just staying in touch with them constantly and trying to be innovative, while at our end, we were trying to be innovative and how to go about it. We online programming was an option because, you know, this is an extremely competitive program. About 1,000 students apply, goals apply every year, and we select only 20 per year. So they were excited. They wanted to come to the U.S. and we couldn't. So yes, there was a pretty long window of uncertainty while we are discussing things not only with our partner universities when they are trying to figure out things, but also on the other side, State Department, the policies, and those policies are universal. So first we heard that, you know, we tried to make a case to transition the girls to online programming because that was better than not having anything. But then State Department decided to suspend the program, and eventually, just a month ago, a month and a half ago, they told us that the program will end, and the girls were hoping to at least come next year, but they can't. So, but you know, when you're true to the mission, you try. So we are still trying. We try to get another quarter, you know, out of the program, and we are still working with our partners to see if we can create something. And also, American University itself is creating some coursework to give, you know, something to the girls. So it has been challenging, and again, because it involved international travel, so. We weren't really sure for a very long time, but the hardest part was to inform the girls that they will not be able to come next year. The age group is also, these young people are also very resilient. That was personally very sad for our team and also for our partners. We are trying to work around that so that the girls can at least have something. But in terms of partners, State Department was also sympathetic, but that was universal policy that applied to all exchange programs. So nothing could have been done, and they tried to help us in any way they could. But yeah, I think the human connection and interaction and that spirit of coming together and trying to make things work was the most beautiful thing that I got out of this challenge.
Thank you. I think Well, one, I would love to chat after this and figure out, I don't know, what can we do to help save this program? It's such an amazing and critical program. You know, the two young women that I worked with at GW and Georgetown, three actually, I mean, they were just amazing. And it was great just to hear from them afterwards and the impact of that experience. You know, SDG number five for empowering women and girls is an important part of the UN SDGs. We know that, you know, the burden on women and girls is higher during the pandemic. A lot of, you know, the responsibilities, cultural and household, fell upon women and girls. Violence against women and girls, we know, has increased exponentially during the pandemic. Women are on the front lines, you know, in the pandemic, working in hospitals and caregivers. So I think programs like Summer Sisters are so important, and kind of this overarching theme of empowering women and girls as part of equity in education is so important. Alicia, would you be able to speak a little bit about Barnard and some of the amazing things that you're doing around equity and empowering women and girls in education?
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about, of course, like where I come from in terms of pre-college. And I think just even the move to go online, to me, I look at that as another tool for equity in education. Yes, internet access may play a role in people not being able to access, but it also allows us on the flip side to get to people in real time where they don't have to come to campus. That isn't a barrier, where space isn't a barrier. So I very much look at online education and doing it well as equity work, because it allows us to reach different kinds of learners. And then in terms of what we have going on campus, I mentioned earlier that I am an alum of the Higher Education Opportunity Program at Mount St. Mary College. At Barnard, we have numerous opportunity programs, so Barnard Opportunity Programs. And they really do a great job, along with admissions, of identifying young women who are ready for college. And a financial barrier would be the reason why they couldn't attend a school like Barnard. And so they work with high schools and community partners to really bring the best and the brightest young women who, you know, their lives may not look like the other girls' lives on our campus, but that doesn't make them any less deserving to be there. And so really putting together this model of great support and an emphasis on belonging on campus. And so I'm really excited to be at a place that not only has the Higher Education Opportunity Program for New York students, but also expanding that for students beyond New York. And then we have our Science Pathways program, which is specifically targeted to women of color coming to Barnard to train in the sciences, which we've seen time and time again, especially now, with a lot of talk around Black maternity and fetal health deaths in America, why it is so important for women of color to be in the sciences, and for a number of other reasons. And so programs such as this exist for this reason, to answer the critical call for a more diverse workforce and a more diverse space of academia to study issues that affect different kinds of people. And so those are just some of the initiatives that we have going at Barnard that are preparing our students to answer these great calls in their future careers.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, another reason why this, with especially these two sustainable development goals in education and empowering women and girls is so important. My mother in the late 60s and early 70s, she was a non-traditional college student, had a family, was studying something that was so brand new, computer science. Way back then, they had these cards and these big giant rooms with computers in it. But she didn't finish because she had responsibility of family. Economics were a big piece of it. She was a woman of color. There were cultural expectations. And I wonder, you know, as a high school student for herself, she was a straight A student, had a scholarship at a private school, just as a non-traditional college student with children, had she gotten the proper college advising and just understanding what higher ed was and what it would be and how to stay in and to, you know, completion to graduation is so important. Casey, can you speak a little bit why college advising is such a pivotal, important piece to helping some of these sustainable development goals around equity and empowering women and girls?
No, and I that story is so powerful, Esteban, because I think one of the first steps, and it sounds small, but is actually just making people aware of what the American higher education landscape actually looks like. And this is always my pet peeve and frankly has heightened in the last few months when the media in particular talks about, you know, students going back to college. And I think in America, we have this outsized stereotype of this, you know, kid who's in a frat who goes to a college and they're 18 and they, you know, don't work in college. And that's not the actual statistics. You know, you mentioned your mom, almost 25% of American undergraduate students are parents. They have kids. You know, we have 6.5 million students who are part-time, 8 million who are in the community college two-year pathway. The majority of students are educated near home in some way, often so they can work while in college. And I think so the first step for a lot of students is feeling included in the narrative and the image of what we think of as an American college student. You know, at Mills, we had housing for parents. And oftentimes when I'm working with students on the Common application, there is a question for listing your children. And sometimes my 17 and 18 year old students don't realize oftentimes out of their world that there are other 17, 18, 30 year old students who answer that. You know, like you, Esteban, my mom, well, she just finished her bachelor's degree at 67 years old. And I think we need to kind of better educate our young people about the many pathways to completion and persistence, be it 2-year to 4-year, public, private, women's colleges, HBCUs, the whole gamut of American education, so that people can picture themselves in it.
I think that's very important in seeing ourselves there. Maveen, you were talking about a newer program that is going to target undergraduate students.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that? And is it the same?
So same model. Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. So it will be built on the same model. We are currently in the process of securing commitments from partner universities. And again, I'm amazed at the spirit. And most of these programs are led by women. And it's so amazing to see women helping women. And so we've had some commitments, but we are still short on a few. We need 20 scholarships per year. Pardon me. So that's where we are. The program, we have been pre-approved. It will officially start on October 1st this year. And we were, initially the program was for 2 years, it was meant for 2 years, but state has ended up granting us the time period for 3 years instead of two. So that's very refreshing and nice that we can continue the mission, because if you get a little longer time, then you build these relationships and can get, it helps you achieve some of the goals in a much more sustainable way. But I'm so, just going back to your story, Esteban, it was so moving. And and also Casey's mom story. Oh, wow, hats off to both of your moms. And I'm sure Alicia's mother is the same way. I deal with these challenges with the students every day. We are also building mentorship program for summer sisters, something that we will transition, continue with summer sisters as well as transition to the other program. So role models, as you said, Casey, seeing, picturing people, and if girls can see their future in other people's, you know, with in other women, then that's then that looks like a possibility. And I've been working and researching not only for on a regional level in South Asia, but also US. Problems are so similar, the socioeconomic challenges. but information gaps and advocacy and trying to knock the doors to change the social and cultural barriers, the mind barriers of parents and communities around, it's so important, and it can really help the girls because yes, we are always short on resources, but still there are some resources. So just knowledge and the drive can help them access those resources. I just wanted to add that because this is very close to my heart, this whole mission, and I can go on and on and on. So I'll stop here.
Okay. My next question is for Alicia. You know, Mavi was talking about their program, and how it's transitioning to undergraduate students. But whether it's a young woman from Pakistan or a young woman from Harlem or someone from the East Bay who's attending college for the first time, and there's younger siblings or cousins or just a neighbor who lives on the same block that sees them go off to college, what is that impact? Do you feel, because I know Barnard does some amazing things in that regard, but what is that impact when someone back home sees that person go off?
I say I'm a first generation student on a technicality, right? In my grandmother's lineage, I'm the only person who has a degree. But outside of that, her brothers and sisters actually have graduate degrees, and so do their children. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to be around my cousins when they were in college, go visit my cousin who was an RA, and really, get to understand what college life was about. I remember when my cousin graduated from Howard Med School, that was a big deal to be able to see that. And so I understand what that did for my life, which is even more important as to why we continue with our partnership programs and really understanding communities and what just representation does for students, for their morale, for their understanding of the landscape. It's super important because to be able to see yourself in someone else's lived experience it's a big part of the battle students have with feeling as though they belong on a college campus. So it's a big part of the puzzle in terms of reaching students where they are for sure.
Thank you. So we've been talking about education equity, empowering women and girls. One thing I love about the United Nations SDGs is that you talk to somebody and maybe they've never heard about the SDGs, and you talk about all 17 of them, and someone says, "Wow, like I had no idea. Like my organization is actually working towards that, or we're helping to solve this or that." But it's through that awareness and understanding that they realize, like, okay, I am a part of that. Whether it's something that you're working on domestically or globally, but what we see that there are hurdles. Whether it's partnership hurdles, it's finding the right partners, collaborations, funding. What do you see as some of the biggest hurdles in reaching these SDGs, especially around education and equity and empowering women and girls? What do you see as some of the hurdles that we're going to face in the near future and in the long term? Anybody wants to jump in, that'd be great.
I have a few I can jump in with. And this was framing that I heard from the Dean of Admission at Swarthmore, Dr. Andrew Moe, who does really excellent work with rural students in particular, but he talked about micro barriers and macro barriers. And I think right now, when we were building out this course for seniors, one of the micro barriers he speaks to a lot is things as simple as application fees and sending test scores. And that sounds simple, but it's huge. College Board and ACT, if they still exist in 10 years, and I'll get to that with the macro barrier, but sending test scores, it costs money, and sending applications sent costs money. And Dr. Andrew Moe had done a study about how explicit colleges were about how to find fee waivers to apply to college. And oftentimes it's very buried and students don't realize how they can request a fee waiver if they are qualified for free or reduced lunch. It's not as explicit for a lot of students. students. So that's one that leaves them not usually applying to maybe the range of schools that they want to. And then a macro barrier is testing, standardized testing. And I think we're seeing hopefully the beginning of the end of standardized testing with this current cycle. There were already 1,000 schools that were test optional, meaning they didn't require or need standardized testing to admit you, but many still used it for scholarship and merit money. And the sooner that standardized testing can, and frankly, my opinion, die a slow death, the better, because it has long not been a predictor of college success, in addition to be vastly inequitable of a measurement tool. And it's also a barrier of access for a student to apply and get into colleges. So I think this year in particular, and the University of California system as of last week is now test blind, meaning they won't even look at tests for this cycle. My hope is that barrier starts to crumble and we don't replace it with another test that another company creates, is the hope.
Wow. That's very important. And those are definitely barriers to access.
Esteban, just wanted to build up on what Casey said. And Casey, you're absolutely right. I think financial challenges are the biggest two, So I apologize. Sometimes I'm thinking too much in my head to overcome. So, but I also think that in terms of if we are to spread quality education and gender equality and empowerment throughout the world, it's all stakeholders need to come together and get educated. And private sector, I know, has been feeling the weight of it, and it's different from their bottom line. But studies have shown that their bottom lines can be met if there is gender equality and equal opportunity for women, and women enter workforce. I mean, by 2025, according to a McKinsey report, about $28 trillion could be added to GDP if women were to fully participate in workforce. So it's I think all stakeholders, in terms of also universities, need to look inwards and see how they can make it easier, instead of just looking at the end of the day, it's also a business. So yes, I understand it's very important to be sustainable and money is important, but there are things that all these stakeholders can help to overcome these financial challenges faced by the underserved in the world. They are in US, they are across the world, and also governments. And when World Bank is giving money, or IMF is giving money, or IFC is giving money, I think governments also need to be held accountable when they also are not spending money for their human development goals, like health and education. So stakeholders need to be educated. They need to realize what their stake is. Yes, it's a long-term haul, but they will eventually win when everybody else wins. So otherwise, I think these problems will just continue to perpetuate.
And I'd go back to the conversation we were having earlier about our partnerships. When I think about our community-based partners that are struggling financially right now, we depend on them a lot to identify their stellar students, to work with them. They've built mentorship programs for their students. They have alumni outreach, which is super important. And just thinking about them during this time and how do they sustain the work that they're doing without being able to fundraise, with their fundraising drying up. I think we've got to pay attention to that field a little bit more because they really are the engines that drive our success, especially on college campuses in terms of recruiting a diverse student body. They've been built for a reason to support students that are oftentimes marginalized and not seen and heard through the process. So I continue to keep them at the forefront of my mind and encourage others in the field to do so as well, because a lot of them are struggling right now.
Thank you. As we kind of wrap up, I'd like to ask everyone, and take a second, I'll start out. What's an ask that we have of our audience? Because we have people around the world watching this right now, people who are in the private sectors and nonprofits and higher ed, people who are running rural schools. We have families, people who are raising children, the next generation of leaders. What do you want to ask them so that we continue this change and this work towards the SDGs? My ask is, whether it's in your workplace or at home at the dinner table, talk about the SDGs and have a conversation about what your organization, your work community, your family, what can you do to help solve the SDGs so that we could realize them by 2030? That's a hefty goal. But I think especially for the youth and having that conversation with our children is so important, because they're going to be the ones who are going to inherit the framework, and they're going to be the ones who are going to implement it and see it through for their children. So that's my ask, is that we have conversations. Does anybody else have an ask that they would like to have of the audience?
I have a couple, but I'll start with two. I think one on the macro micro scale. One is small for the adults, and if you are around teenagers or anybody who's considering college, be mindful of our language. I think oftentimes we don't realize that we fall into traps around saying something is a good school or remarking that something is a bad school, or, you know, kind of qualifying college in different ways that send signals to kids who are listening. Why is something a good school? Is it because we saw it on the front page of a newspaper or ranked in some random report? Or is it because it's an equitable, inclusive space working towards some of these end goals? So I think one is being mindful of how we talk about college in front of young people and what we choose to celebrate in terms of achievements. Anybody who's persisting in graduating college is an achievement. And I think the second one is, if anybody is working in a school or is sending their own children to schools, to be mindful about how much the school is relying on or using testing. I think we all need to be a lot more thoughtful about what testing is measuring and why we rely on it. And if it is not equitable, why are we relying on it at all?
Thank you. Anyone else want to jump in?
I was waiting for Alicia to jump in. So, yeah, I think Casey has pointed out to the micro and macro elements as well, talking about them, educating people on these. Every one of these SDGs is critical to human growth and development and to our happiness and health, education, a job. So just recruiting more and more advocates, spreading the word, having these conversations at an individual level and also at a collective level, I think that could at least, because at the end of the day, we humans make institutions and organizations. So as I was listening to Indra Nui once, and her daughter, she herself has been a former, PepsiCo CEO, and her daughter worked for an NGO. So her daughter educated her on a lot of issues. So I think the word can get to the right place. But again, as you said, Esteban, if we continue to talk about everything and recruit advocates for all of these SDGs, I think at least the conversation will start, and then we can move towards solutions.
Agreed.
I think my ask from the audience is just always to remember that the world is bigger than their corner. I think a lot of times we forget that in the work that we do, and we become very tunnel vision and laser focused on where we're at. But we can help so much more by remembering others. So just to continue to remember others who may not be in our situations, which are sometimes, privileged, so that we continue to carry the torch for others who can't necessarily carry it for themselves in this fight for equity.
Wow, that was an amazing conversation. I would love to continue it, and I know the four of us will. I look forward to working with all of you on future initiatives, and I know IdeaGen is also I'm looking forward to that. So I want to thank everyone for joining us and being part of this conversation. It's a critical conversation, and I just want to thank you. So as we continue on with this social change and changing the world, onward and upward. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.